Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Recording in progress.
This is the Macko and Cos podcast. And you know it's a Zoom one because recording in podcast. Happy New Year, Bob. How you doing?
I'm good, Maddie. There's going to be a storm later, or at least there's probably going to be a storm later. So you and I decided to do Zoom so I didn't get stuck in the East End with the ice storm coming down.
That's right. That's right. The streetcars can't handle it.
They can't handle the truth. Actually, right now, the streetcars are the truth. There's very little time, and there's so much to get to in the world of sports, and we haven't done a live podcast in weeks.
Couple weeks.
So I'm going to start off with the obvious question, which is Christmas ornaments. Christmas is done. New Year's is done. It's January the 6th. I'm looking behind you on your Zoom camera. I see Christmas accoutrements and a tree. I'm looking across my living room. Exactly the same thing. Tree, lights. What is the line after which it is too late and you've left them up too long?
It's a great question, Bob. So for us, we got started a little bit late, like on December 10th. So we're making up for lost time. But here's our basic rule. As we've discussed, this might be the best Christmas tree Amy and I've had. As long as the tree is drinking water, we're going to keep it up. Maybe it's here till the Olympics. I don't know. But if the tree is drinking water, it's not coming down.
The tree is perfectly shaped. It is perfectly dressed. It's like an amazing haircut that you just can't ruin with a funny night's sleep. It's like it always looks perfect, your tree.
It really is. We're never gonna do better than this one. And it's not out of laziness. It's literally, okay, it's still drinking water. It would feel weird. You know, it's like flushing a goldfish down the toilet when the goldfish is still alive. That's what it feels like.
That's actually a really great analogy. Wow, you're on fire today, buddy.
I've done two TV hits already. So, you know, I'm broadcast ready.
I am in my track pants and a t-shirt that looks like a flag after a war.
It's in tatters.
It is just tattered on a stick. I am that stick. You know, since we're talking a little bit about the Olympics here, everything that's happened this past weekend with Venezuela and the States and even the World Juniors in a weird way with Canada losing has upped the stakes for the Olympics for me. Are you feeling this? Like there's a little bit of the political global thing where, you know, we're Canada and, you know, people are taking shots at us out there in the world. And so you kind of want to stand up and say, you know, not on my watch. And then the World Juniors, they lose, which means they got bronze, beat Finland. But then it's like the last 3 years are fifth, fifth, and third. And you go, well, that's not great. So are you ratcheting up your curiosity or your intensity around the Olympics?
Well, of course. Fuck you, Czechia. I mean, that's the big one for me.
Problem right now.
Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, Trump or Venezuela and tariffs, blah, blah, blah. Czechia has knocked out our World Junior team 3 years in a row. That's so Mark Carney. What's that?
We should invade.
Yes. Mark Carney.
A special
elbows up.
Yeah. Elbow drop.
Yeah. Elbow drop on Czechia.
Operation Elbow Drop.
That's right. That's right.
When we invade the States, that's what we have to call it, Operation Elbow Drop.
The bigger picture thing is, let's face it, when we're getting close to Canada versus the United States in men's Olympic hockey, everything's going to be ratcheted up. We're going to have, replays of the four nations where everyone was punching each other, which was coming right after tariffs and 51st state and all that bullshit. So, yeah, like when that happens, Canada versus America, because there is no more Russia. There's no more Russian hockey. So Canada versus States is going to be massive. And also, to put a bow on the earlier thing, Bob, Czechia, not in Olympic men's hockey. Fuck you, Czechia.
That's okay. We'll get theirs. They'll get theirs for sure.
Yeah.
I'm looking up a specific thing here, and it's the punch up at Piastani. Do you remember what that is?
No. Which one was that?
Bench clearing brawl between Canada and the Soviet Union during the final game of the 1987 World Junior Ice Hockey Championships in Piastani, Czechoslovakia, January 4th, 1987. I'm reading that off of Google AI here. But it made me think about how we may be cruising for another punch-up at Piastani. And for those people who are young and don't remember this, it was fucking deranged. Like, it was the end of the game, and these two teams went at each other, and it was, honestly, it was the final act of Blazing Saddles. They're like, the ice was just all fights. The whole thing turned in, you know, it was, you know, it was the final scene in a war movie. It was incredible. And not good, in a way, like, because you had teenagers beating the shit out of each other.
I feel that the first aid was probably not up to snuff afterwards.
They didn't know what to do, and at one point they turned the lights off to try and calm things down.
That's right.
They couldn't stop the fighting. It just turned in, like, it was maybe the definitive hockey brawl of all time.
That is not how you de-escalate, by turning the lights off.
We'll put out the fire with a little bit of gasoline here.
And here we go. Yep. Hey, no one can see anything. The lights are off. Even less personal responsibility. Punch, 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 punch.
I don't want to say lukewarm, because it's the Olympics and it's best on best, and that's always exciting. But I had almost an intellectual curiosity about it. I wasn't super emotionally involved. Until recently. You know, the endless debates on TSN about, you know, Macklin Celebrini, Connor, you know, Bedard, one of them, two of them, both of them, you know, can you, neither? Like, it just felt like that was about 40% of the programming day.
Got to fill the time, Bob. Got to fill the time.
You know, but now it's sort of like, oh, okay. And I'm looking at Austin Matthews and the other Americans, and I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm kind of personally invested in this right now.
To me, the most interesting thing is Connor McDavid. He's never been in one of these. Crosby, this will be his final one. And I know I'm going basic bitch here, but like, that to me is the most fascinating thing. For McDavid, this represents the closest he will get to true hockey glory. You know, who knows when the next time he's going to get to a Stanley Cup final.
We put Tom Wilson on the team. I feel like that wasn't an accident.
No.
I wonder to what extent, it's always interesting when nations play and you're playing people who are on your pro club, and how emotions will figure in. You know, after the Kachucks turned full bloom asshole during the Four Nations, it feels like, how do you invite that person back into your room when you basically said, hey, nice nation you got there. Hang on, let me whip it out.
Oh, we're going back to Blazing Saddle. Excuse me while I whip this out.
It could be that kind of day. Maybe in 2026, we're going to be Blazing Saddles instead of Jaws.
Ooh, well, you know what? It's not a far drop off. It's a bit of a drop off, but it's not too far of a drop off. Here's the question. How are Leaf fans going to feel if Austin, and I guess it's different now because Austin Matthews has been so good since Christmas, because I was thinking if Austin Matthews was still having just a really poor season, but then was great against Canada in the Olympics, how angry we would be. It's like, wait a minute, you're saving the good stuff for the Americans and you're not doing it for your local hometown team. So I was always curious about that.
Like when Keith Richards is keeping his best songs for his own solo records and the Stones for the C&D cuts.
By the way, Keith Richards, he didn't save his best stuff for the solo.
Oh, some of it's good.
I know, but you know.
Damn the expensive winos? Yeah. I don't need to tell you to go back and listen to it because you're a Stones aficionado, so I'm sure you've listened to it plenty. I like it. It's good. It's just he can't sing.
We can both agree on this, Bob. Mick Jagger did not rise his solo stuff. He didn't save anything for his solo stuff.
Maybe the single greatest moment of Family Guy is when they do the tribute to the Mick Jagger, David Bowie dancing in the streets video.
Yeah.
Peter just looks in at the end of it. He goes, what the hell was that?
Yeah, this actually happened. This actually happened.
Oh, so good. Yeah, the American thing, it's interesting because I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, okay, so the Danes are in this. What happens if the States go after, you know, Greenland? I mean, it could get really tense. Like, we don't know where this is going. The next 6 weeks in the world are up for fucking grabs. And then we've got a huge international tournament going on, you know, across all the sports. But I'm just curious to see does any of this actually spill out onto the ice? Because we kind of saw it we definitely saw it during the Four Nations. And I'm wondering how it's going to play out at the Olympics.
If I'm one of the broadcasters, I'm getting a message to Trump right before and saying, hey, even if you're not going to do anything, could you shit talk some of the other nations right before the start? Because we could use a ratings boost.
It's so true, and it would work. You know what? I try not to take the red meat, but in this case, I'm all in.
Yeah.
Give me the chili spoon. I'm going all in on this political red meat. You know, you mentioned Auston Matthews, and one of the big questions I wanted to get to you with you today was, you know, while we were off, he set the all-time goal record for the Leafs, passing Mats Sundin. I think he's at 421 now. Kind of a muted response, you know.
Yes.
So, you know, they play live tonight against Florida, and we'll see how that plays out. But just in conversation, it doesn't feel like most sports fans really care or even know. So I wanted to ask you, because you're more on the finger on the pulse of what people are talking about being on the radio. What does this mean for Toronto that Auston Matthews is now the greatest goal scorer in Leafs history?
It doesn't mean a lot today on January 6, 2026. It may mean something down the road when his career is over and we look back at it. And you're right. It much like Canada's celebration of getting the bronze last night, Matthews, you know, getting that record did feel muted. And I think there's the obvious reasons. The team isn't playing great. Matthews until recently isn't playing great. Lack of playoff heroic moments. Those are the obvious ones. But I think one other reason is actually a tip of the cap to Auston Matthews. This record felt inevitable because he's been so damn good at scoring goals. We kind of knew this day was coming. And the analogy, Bob, that I used is you could admire a sunrise and the colors and the pinks and the light pastel blues, and you can admire how beautiful it is, but you're not going, "Oh my God, did you see that?" Because you knew it was coming and you knew there's going to be another one tomorrow.
Do you think it's 1967-itis?
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely part of this.
No, I think a lot about how, you know, you and I have talked a lot this year, and I think a lot of people have kind of caught up to this conversation about how the team is really, it's kind of in limbo with a lot of fans right now. Some people are even outright negative towards it. I feel like Auston Matthews is caught in the crossfire of that a little bit because he's never been a bad guy. And even when we've criticized him or called him aloof, that's not to say that Auston Matthews hasn't been an enormous gift to the Maple Leafs organization. He may not be what everyone wants him to be, but, you know, that's everybody else's problem, not his. He's an incredible goal scorer. Incredible. Ovechkin-esque. Like, if he could have stayed healthy, and it doesn't look like he did, but who knows what kind of heights he could have hit over the course of his career. But I kind of feel like short of a Stanley Cup, none of these players are ever going to get their flowers, really. Like, this is only really about one thing, and it's break the curse. And everything in terms of the Leafs, everything is framed against this curse. It's kind of a drag, actually.
It is because we were promised a thing, you know, of playoff glory because of all the individual excellence. Matthews gets 4 goals in his first game and 40 goals every year and all these other players. So the expectations rightfully got raised. And then every year in the playoffs, they get knocked down. And I think that collectively, that sort of PTSD is why there's sort of a muted response with Auston Matthews. And by the way, it doesn't even need to be a Stanley Cup win. Here's what it needs to be: an upset over a favorite, a heroic run, a making it to a game six, a Auston Matthews scoring more than his career average in the playoffs. Matthews goes Vlad Guerrero Jr. If you give the fans enough of that, then it changes our perspective. Yes, a Stanley Cup win would be fantastic, but I don't think you need that. You just need more. You just need better than what you've got.
I was thinking about the history of the best players that our teams have had. And I don't mean just the ones we love the most, but the actual best players, the ones you look back historically and say, wow, they were in an elite category. And Toronto is in a weird place where I was thinking about who are the Leafs in terms of the great talent that they've had historically? Because we want to say that that's not true. That's actually probably the Habs. But we're not even the Red Sox. You know, when you think about all the great Red Sox players that have existed over the years, you know, Carlton Fisk and Carly Ostrzemski, and just like this incredible laundry list of great players, we're kind of more like the St. Louis Cardinals. Like, after Stan Musial, who's the greatest Cardinal?
Albert Pujols.
Yeah, sure. How often do you talk about Albert Pujols in terms of, like, yes, that's true, but The point sort of being the St. Louis Cardinals, who are this storied organization and have this incredible fan base, you know, they've been around for 100 plus years and they've had probably about four or five players that you'd go, wow, that person really defined their moment. And the Leafs are kind of the same way. Like after Austin Matthews, I don't know, you got to go back to like Matt Sundin, obviously. Yep. But even when Dougie was there and Wendell and Dave Andrechuk, like, you know, they weren't the best players in the league.
Well, Doug, I mean, Gilmore, I think, came in second in the Hart one year. And it just happened you're doing it around the time of Mario Lemieux and still of Wayne Gretzky.
Like hockey at that period had better players.
Yeah.
Impressive players. I guess what I'm trying to say is Toronto has never really learned how to fall in love with a player who's the best. And the players we have had who are the best broken our hearts, like Vince.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Vince felt like he was going to be the next Jordan and he left and it was kind of ugly the way he went.
Oh yeah. No, I think like, if I look at the city of Toronto, big picture, the ones who did like, and unfortunately the career went in a different way, but Roberto Alomar, yes. Roberto Alomar was one of the best at his position and was heroic and was part of two World Series wins.
Acquired by a trade.
Was not drafted and developed here.
It's a little different. Like, we loved him. Of course we loved him. And he wasn't exactly Ricky Henderson or Dave Winfield, where those were just like, you know, purchases for the year to win a title. No, Alomar was more than that for sure. But it's not quite the same. Like, you don't think of Alomar and think, wow, what a great Jays career. You think, what a great baseball career he had. You know, clearly this was his best stop.
Yes.
You know, it's different when someone's with you for the whole ride. Like, that's what makes Vladdy Guerrero so important, because if he can continue excellence, he's going to give us something that our generation has never had. Someone we've watched their whole career who is one of the best.
Because of how cheap Rogers used to be, we never got the final ending with Roy Halladay or with Carlos Delgado. You know, there's a bunch of Chris Carpenter. You know, there's a bunch of great Blue Jays in those late 90s to early 2000s. And you're right, Bob, there is a difference about the draft and develop guy, because what this all comes back to, like, I think the bigger picture of this whole conversation is sense of ownership. We want to love Matthews, but to truly love you, you got to do that thing in the playoffs when you overcame and you had the heroic moment. That's where the full storytelling, bonding, fan with player comes from. And that hasn't happened with the Leafs captain. And it's, again, to go back to the original thing, it's why him setting the record doesn't feel as significant.
I wonder if he's going to be a bit like A-Rod.
Mm.
Versus like a Jeter, right? Because A-Rod was the best player in the game, but he never really was great in the playoffs. And then there was one year where he was actually pretty good, and it sort of helped to mitigate the legacy. But we don't really think of A-Rod as a great playoff performer.
No.
Great player, like one of the best shortstops in history. But, you know, because of that, he never became a Jeter. He was a more talented player than Jeter.
Correct. Yes.
But he was not the captain.
Oh, no. It's funny. A-Rod, when you think of A-Rod, the first thing you think of is that 10-year, $250 million contract he signed with Texas. You think of money, you think of statistics, and then you think of steroids. You don't think of the A-Rod moments, even though you're right. In terms of the numbers or pure talent, A-Rod was superior to Jeter.
And with Jeter, you think of Yankee pinstripes. He's one of the definitive Yankees. You think of clutch play, and you think of maybe the greatest starting five of women that any athlete has ever had in history.
He had a hell of a run on the field and a hell of a run off the field.
So true. That's just what I'm thinking to myself, like, you know, a bit like LeBron is with the Lakers. Like, when you're in LA, you realize like that's still Kobe's team. Like, they don't think of LeBron as one of them. They recognize that his greatness on the court is up there with the other greats that they've had, but they don't need him. Like, they've got Magic, you know, they've got Kobe. To an extent, they've got Kareem, you know, like they've got, and the Leafs don't really have that.
No.
Like, who could you measure Austin against after Matt Sundin? Nobody.
No one.
And that's a 50-year span I'm talking about. You know, so we've never really had much in the way of great players. We've had a lot of really good ones. And so I almost feel like we don't even, like we care, but it's not like we even associate ourselves as a market that's had a history of greatness.
We haven't. Oh, no, you can, like, because, yeah, if you look at the big picture thing, the pure top greats of all time, it's in short supply in the city of Toronto. It's true.
The most talented Raptors ever, and I'm not going to include Kawhi because he was a rental, but if you go outside of that, Vince, Tracy McGrady, and Chris Bosh, and all of them left the organization, and there was kind of a bad feeling about it.
Correct.
The two greatest Raptors that we love are DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. And both of those guys are on the bubble for the Hall of Fame, and they've had great careers. But no one would say, you know what, kids, I got to see Kyle Lowry play.
It's funny. I'm now thinking, when was the last time the city of Toronto produced a player that you would feel is top 50 all time in their respective sport? It doesn't really exist.
It doesn't really exist, and we thought we had it with Matthews. And the stats suggest it, right? Like, that's the thing, is he's 28 years old. He's coming in on 500 goals in a season or two. He's a phenomenal talent. Now, clearly, there's some kind of drop-off there, and everybody's holding their breath, hoping that that can reverse at least 80%. Yeah, there just feels like everybody was on the same, like, the incredible high that we've got this guy. Like, I think of Brian Hayes on TSN, the draft night when they won the lottery, and the famous, "We did it, Naylor." You know, he was speaking for the whole city, right?
He was. And we had the blue wave, you know, for those years where the offense was so good. And it always felt like this great time was coming, and it never delivered.
Let me ask you this. Right now, if I said we could just swap Jack Eichel for Austin Matthews, would you think about it?
Yes, I would. I would absolutely think about it, because there seems to be something where Matthews' body is betraying him. His body looks the same. He's still only 28, but it's always like, there's always so many conversations about, is he healthy? Is he healthy? And when you have those conversations on a regular basis, you just get nervous and you look to the future and you think, wow, this might be over sooner than I expected.
And the reason I mentioned Eichel is because at the time that he was drafted, I think it was Boston College, you know, he was always sort of like, he's a great young player. He's not Connor, but he's a great young player, or he's not Austin. Well, it turns out he's not Connor, but his career at this exact moment is a little closer to Austin's in terms of how valuable he would be to your team than you would like. You know, we thought that Austin was more like Connor. He may be closer to Jack Eichel.
Right now he is. Right now, 100%.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but the journey that we've seen that got us here wasn't the case, where you, like, remember when Gary Lawless came out and said, I'd rather have Patrick Laine than Austin Matthews, and everyone went crazy, and it was so clearly clickbait. No, good for Gary. He got it going.
Yep. Yeah. Still no, Gary knew the assignment and he took a chance. He lost that one. You ain't going to bat 1,000.
No, but he did get attention. Yeah, it's just, I'm thinking a lot about this because, you know, I've loved the Leafs my whole life and I've now seen many generations of this team. I should think this is great. And I don't. And that's weird.
Well, because it feels like the party's over. That's it. We were promised a great party. We were given a good party. And it feels like it's ending sooner than we expected.
No, that's such a great way to put it. We were told it'd be a great party and it was a good party. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. Oh, wait, did they turn the lights on? Oh, no, you can't turn the lights on yet. I'm not ready to scurry out of here like a rat on a sinking ship.
You got to do the Pia Stani and keep the lights off.
Yeah, look at that. Callback.
I wanted to go through a little bit of, you know, why don't we save football for the end of the week? And we'll do we'll do just a huge football show. Because, you know, we don't have a lot of time today. And with the Trae Young trade rumors going around with Atlanta and the Raptors aren't directly linked to him necessarily. But if you remember, when we started version two of Macko and Cause, now we're really trying. The all new Macko and Cause.
That's right.
One of the things I said was, you watch, by the end of the year, Trae Young's going to be a Raptor. Well, now both the team and Young's representatives have said they're actively looking for trade partners. So I ask you, even if, like, let's just assume that you could do it with Quickly and not much more.
Oh,
would
yeah.
You do it?
Yes, you take that chance. You take that chance. And, you know, Trey, new environment, and maybe just he can improve, not that bit improve, but just go back to who he was. And I take that chance, even with acknowledging his shooting variance issues.
Yeah, that's the big thing is, you know, when he's hitting threes, he's unstoppable. And when he's not, he's a good passer. I kind of would love to see how he would look. Like, Quickly's not really known as a ball mover. God, I mean, Trey's one of the best. He sucks up so much oxygen, like, with his shot. But as a passer, God, he would fit in so beautifully. I put my dog in the yard. Do you hear the barking in the back?
Nope, not yet. So well-trained.
No, you're just not hearing it.
I'll say this, Bob. It's one of the joys of Scotty Barnes. It's one of the assets of having Scotty Barnes here is that you can put a high volume star with him and it won't impact Scotty Barnes and what he does and his ability to win. You know, he only needs 14, 15 shots. Like last night, 16 shots for 18 points, but he had 10 assists. And by the way, that game last night against Atlanta, I love the fact I came in the fourth quarter because Amy and I were watching the last episode of Stranger Things. And what I appreciate about this Raptors team, within 1 minute, I'm mother bleeping at the TV when there was a couple turnovers in a row. And I just love the fact that I'm emotionally engaged with the basketball team because we could not say that a year ago.
They're not a great team. They're certainly a good team. They're in the mix in a bad conference. They feel like they could get a sixth seed or higher. That's a win for this team. I would do Trae Young because I don't know how much better they can get with this organization, like the way they're set up. Some of the young guys, I don't know.
Well, Colin Murray Boyles was great last night.
I was going to say, him I really like. Like, to me, he's so you don't touch him in a deal. But Jacoby Walter just feels like a guy. Grady mm-hmm. Dick feels like a guy. Some people love Grady Dick, but I don't know.
We're hoping. All we're hoping for is 40% three-point shooter. That's what we're hoping for.
You know, when, I don't know. You see the point that I'm trying to make.
Of course.
Trae Young's exciting. God, like if it did work out, then you've got Trae Young, Scotty Barnes, Brandon Ingram, and RJ.
Listen, if you could do a deal like that, you do it in a heartbeat because this is all about one thing. Can you raise the ceiling? This team has got a damn good floor, but the hardest thing in the NBA, can you raise the ceiling?
You know, that's a really good way of putting it, Matt. I like that. I'm going to carry that with me. It's like the Raptors are an example of a solid floor, so-so ceiling. Mm-hmm. They're easy to like. You know, on any given night, they're going to work hard and probably be good. We also know when they face the best teams, they're probably not going to win.
Correct.
But it's better than nothing. And we had a bunch of, you know, nothing for a little while. So, yeah, I think so. I feel like the organization would be aggressive enough to make it happen. Like, I don't think they're a sit on their hands kind of, we've heard them associated with everybody, LaMelo Ball and Anthony Davis and Domantas Sabonis. So I kind of like the fact that we're kind of risk takers that way.
The Raptors are legitimately swimming in the water. The question is, are they being used by agents to up the value or to facilitate them being moved from one team to another, you know? And if, I mean, it would be a big deal if Trae Young wanted to come here. Because again, just going back to the thing about how star players don't want to be in Canada, the taxes or the whatever, or, you know, having to go through customs and this or that, that may not be as big a deal as what it was in the 90s, but the shadows of that still exist.
We are so thirsty for approval. When anybody says, I just love being here, God, we get happy. Like Brandon Ingram saying, you know, I chose Toronto because I felt like it was a fresh start. That guy could go fucking 0 for 40 and nobody cares.
The reason for it is we can ascribe it to Toronto or Canadian insecurity. And there's absolutely truth to that. But there's also truth to the other thing. Name me the star player that said, I want to be in Toronto. Name me that player.
Tavares.
What's that?
John Tavares. But you remember what a big deal that was.
Yeah. But I'm saying in basketball, it doesn't exist. And part of it is almost all NBA stars were born and raised and developed in America. They don't want to come to this mysterious hinterland. Like, there still is some reality to it. And yes, we want approval, but there's also just the precedent of it.
The North American sports has been dominated by Americans for many, many years. And Americans don't give a shit about anybody who's not American. Mm-hmm. They don't know anything about it. They don't want to know anything about it. They think everything is a worse version of where they live. Honestly, like, we're talking about guys that have been in a bubble their whole lives. They probably couldn't name 12 states.
No. And by the way, I don't blame them for that. That bubble they were put in early was, hey, stay at the gym, work out, and you have a chance to be a star and to make generational money. We all would have agreed on that Faustian bargain, and then we just never would have known what Faust meant.
Who's he play for?
By the way, we have 4.5 minutes. Quick shout out to Jeff Pollock, jeffpollock.com. Jeff with a G, sponsor of the show. He's our lawyer. If you need legal help, he's like Diamond and Diamond, except much better and less scary on TV commercials. jeffpollock.com.
I wonder what he thinks of the, I got to send him this text and just ask, what do you think of Polyev supporting Trump and the Venezuela invasion?
Well, probably has mixed feelings.
Yeah, I imagine they all do.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, that guy is just the one slap the forehead after another. He doesn't seem stupid. I'm not talking about Jeff. I'm talking about Polyev here.
Yeah.
But man, he seems determined to not be prime minister.
And there's a lot about him that there's a lot of charisma there. Like when he's talking on the, when they're doing the, you know, the political thing where they're all sitting there in the House of Commons or whatever it's called. And you can tell right now, you know, my opinion doesn't mean much what I'm saying, you know, the political thing when they're on the House of Commons. But sometimes, man, like his passive aggressive is fantastic.
He's an amazing troll.
Yeah.
He's funny. Like, he's mm-hmm. so snarky and he's very funny. He can take it too far. I think eating the apple during the interview probably wasn't a good look.
He tried prop comedy. He tried prop comedy. Doesn't work.
Hey, before we wrap up, I got to ask you your thoughts on Stranger Things. You and I haven't talked about it. Apparently, there's supposed to be a secret episode that drops tomorrow on Netflix.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is the rumor.
Okay, I'll say it quick. I don't know why the ratings are on Rotten Tomatoes are as low. I love the fifth season. It's so hard to end a series. I thought they ended it really well. And also, Bob, the nerd in me, there was so much more Dungeons and Dragons in this final season. So I two thumbs up. I really enjoyed it. I thought they nailed the ending.
I didn't love the fifth season. I wouldn't say they nailed the ending, but I think they did a better job than most people are giving them credit for.
Yeah, and I liked it a lot.
We'll put a pin in the D&D thing. Yeah. I just want to say one of the challenges that we have as a culture now is everything has become a bit comic book guy. Worst episode ever.
Like, yeah.
There's the super fans and they either love it. Like, they're like Leafs fans, right? Like, you either love it so much that you're irrational or you hate it so much that you're irrational. But even just in general, like your point about how hard it is to do. Oh my God. It is so hard to land the plane. It's insanely hard. And they did such a better job than, say, like Game of Thrones did.
Yeah.
You know, but not as good a job as Breaking Bad did. You know, closer to Breaking Bad than Game of Thrones, though, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard.
Just hard watching the kids be so old. That was the only thing. For me, it threw me off that, like, Nancy Wheeler looked like 35 years old, because she is.
Yeah, no, there's, you know, it's we've seen TV shows when the 38-year-old is playing the 19-year-old. That was more of an 80s thing, but yeah.
You know, it's so astonishing when I look at these old 80s movies, because they pop up sometimes, how comfortable we were with the idea that these were naked high schoolers.
Well, you know, it was a simpler time back then.
Really? That was bad. D&D. I'm going to ask you for the 90th time, and you're going to say no. Matt, will you play D&D with me?
Bob, you listen, you put together a campaign. You want to dungeon master this. I will be there. By the way, if you were coming here, I told Amy to say the words chaotic neutral. And I said, I guarantee Bob will have a reaction.
Oh, quick. What are our alignments?
I'm neutral good.
That is so good. So what am I?
You're chaotic good.
I think so. I think that's correct. I
Yeah.
aspire to lawful good, but I'm too fucking angry.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
All
right. Well, Bob, let's.
We out of time?
We have no time. I don't want this to be Game of Thrones. It may not. And if we don't finish it soon, it's going to be Sopranos, where it all goes dark and we don't see a thing.
Bye, Matt.
Bye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cos podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.